Blog Talk Radio.
Have you ever wondered why it's happening again?
Welcome to Mindshifters Radio with your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife Jeannie. Michael and Jeannie share with you the wisdom of the ancient Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. They offer tools and support 5 days a week. They will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love. In Aramaic, Rachma. Michael is the author of Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. And now your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice.
To the brightness within you and the truth that is rooted within me.
Hi, and welcome to Mindshifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. And today is Friday, November the 15th. We welcome you to the show. Our call-in number is 646-200-4169. Press 1, and that puts you in queue to talk to us, and we would love to hear your comments and your questions because then that makes this your show. Welcome, Michael. Oh, he's not back there yet, so hold on just a moment, and I'll keep talking. As far as the Women Healing Women, I had two more people call me this morning, and I think they're going to join us. So I think that the Women Healing Women is about full. I think we've got 16. It's going to be an awesome weekend next weekend, November 21st through the 25th, and a very powerful weekend for us. So we're excited about that. I think Michael is now with us. Hi there. Michael, are you on?
I am. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can now.
Oh, cool. Great. Welcome. Delighted, honored to have everybody with us that chooses to share this time to look into the ancient Aramaic technology of forgiveness that has the courage to confront themselves and to start to shift how they both perceive the world and themselves and everyone in it. And so it's a delight to have each of you with us. Our call-in number is 646-200-4169. If you have a question for us, we will be delighted to do our best to support you in the understanding of this ancient Aramaic technology called forgiveness. And what I'd like to talk about today is the active contribution that perception makes to the world. You know, people tend to think that their perception is kind of a passive thing. It's something the world does to them. And, you know, they say things like you, meaning, of course, the world, whoever's handy. You made me angry. You made me afraid. You hurt me. You upset me. And the belief that these energies are passively received and that we have no part in the process is total denial, and it's just simply an utter falsehood. Perception, thoughts, and feelings are entirely internal. An active process that creates effects on the cells that hold those energies and affect what happens in the world. There are no innocent victims. Generations of apparent victimhood leaves one stuffed with perceptual thought and feeling dynamics that continuously call out to the world for a matching response. And you, as a creator, will never be disappointed. You have a contract with the creator, and the contract is simple. Ask and you receive. I had the privilege about 30 years ago, I used to speak regularly at a conference called Global Science, and in the Global Science Conference, there was a gentleman named Marcel Vogel, who was a 23-year senior scientist from IBM. Marcel had an instrument in his laboratory with which to measure the high energy waves that leave the mind when we think a thought. My perception is active. My thoughts are active. My feelings are active. They radiate an influence to all the world and call for that matching response. Each of your calls will absolutely be answered. Perceptions will be fulfilled because you are that creator. The way the world behaves is not a cause of your perception, thoughts, and feelings, but is a result. Now, that's, I know, that's like, oh, come on, Michael. That's so opposite to what the world has taught us. Well, yes, the world has taught us to be victims because it benefits from our victimhood. Here's a quote from the Course in Miracles that really ties in with this concept. The world you see depicts exactly what you thought you did, except that now you think that what you did is being done to you. The guilt for what you thought is being placed outside yourself on a guilty world that dreams your dreams and thinks your thoughts instead of you. It brings its vengeance, not your own. And the world demonstrates an ancient truth. You will believe that others do to you exactly what you think you did to them. But once deluded into blaming them, you will not see the cause of what they do because you want the guilt to rest on them. How childish is this petulant device to keep your innocence by pushing guilt outside yourself but never letting it go. It is not easy to perceive to jest when all around you do your eyes behold the heavy consequences, but without their trifling cause. Without the cause do its effects seem serious and sad indeed, yet they but follow. And it is their cause that follows nothing and is but a jest. So because our projections of our internal states is denied, that errant mind shows us that certain people or categories of people do not deserve to be honored, but rather appear to be degraded in our perception. You know, women are this way, certain race is that way, a certain color of skin is this way, men are that way. These are all degradations of the mind energy within ourselves, and when we degrade that mind energy within ourselves, we set up messages. And externally, this mental activity, even though it's never even spoken, will energetically call those who hold dishonorable possibilities in them, within themselves. So if someone doesn't deserve to be honored in your perceptual reality, if you hold that, it creates this degradation inside of us. Of course, that's always a reflection of our own self-degradation. That's the internal aspect. We keep the original, they just get the carbon copy. But that mental activity will energetically call those who hold dishonorable possibilities in themselves, all those in the neighborhood who have that projection to heal, to gather at your door and fulfill your call. Guess who's coming to dinner? Of course, once they do their behavior, guided by our energetic dynamics, our perception will then confirm our need to protect ourselves as that attacker responds to the call we sent out. Our worst fears now fulfilled, and you remember that statement, that lesson that Job, the whole book of Job is about one particular lesson, and that is, that which I feared most has come upon me. And if you read that book of Job, you're reading about someone going through a major healing process. And you can get a very graphic sense of how intense that process becomes. When you decide to reverse the perceptions and the projections of a thousand generations, it gets to be crazy time. It's not Dr. Feelgood, this healing process, but each load lifted frees someone else from needing to respond to your call. But if you listen to Job, you can see how intense his process becomes. At one point, he says to the Creator, God, just give me an intermission. And you can tell the intensity of his process by the length of the intermission he asked for. He says, just give me time to swallow my saliva. If you decide to undo the denial, the dissociation, and the projections of a thousand generations, things are going to get very intense. So our own perception, once we perceive what we call the attacker as the problem in our lives, manifests our worst fears. They're fulfilled. And we point a shrieking finger at the world and insist that it is the cause. It's to blame for everything internal that's tearing us apart. And it, not the causes within ourselves, only needs to change for us to be happy. In this internal world where true cause is not allowed a hearing, we are kept in bondage to events that, in our aberrant perceptual systems, are the result of others' actions. And we fail to notice that all 87 times we've been through it, we're the common link. We're the only one that was there. These aberrant states of mind become gods we worship and adore, totally ignorant of the effects that they have on everything in creation. When they come forward, we'll defend them, argue for your limitations, and they're yours. We defend our fear and hostility-based perceptions as sacred. And of course it says, you do not realize how much you listen to your gods and how vigilant you are on their behalf. Yet they exist only because you honor them. Of course, goes on to say, the secret of healing of this, that you are doing this to yourself. No matter what the form of the attack, this is still true. Whoever takes the role of the enemy and the attacker, this is still true. Whatever seems to be the cause of any pain and suffering you feel, this is still true. For you would not react to all the figures in a dream if you knew that you were dreaming. Let them be as hateful and vicious as they may, they could have no effect on you unless you failed to recognize that it is your dream issuing forth from your perceptual system. The Course goes on to say, you may believe that you judge your brothers by the messages they give you, but you've judged them by the messages you give them. Do not attribute your denial of joy to them, or you cannot see the spark in them that would bring you joy. And the mind that lives in that world of denial and dissociation, no resolution is possible. That mind, the Course calls, the unforgiving mind. And here's what it has to say about the unforgiving mind. The unforgiving mind is full of fear and offers love no room to be itself, no place where it can spread its wings in peace and soar above the turmoil of the world. The unforgiving mind is sad, without hope of respite and release from pain. It suffers and abides in misery, peering about in darkness, seeing not, yet certain of the danger lurking there. The unforgiving mind is torn with doubt, confused about itself and all it sees, afraid and angry, weak and blustering, afraid to go ahead, afraid to stay, afraid to waken, or afraid to sleep, afraid of every sound, yet still more afraid of stillness, terrified of darkness, yet more terrified at the approach of light. What can the unforgiving mind perceive but its own damnation? What can it behold but the proof that all its sins are real? The unforgiving mind sees no mistakes, but only sins. It looks upon a world with sightless eyes and shrieks as it beholds its own projections rising to attack its miserable parody of life. It wants to live, yet wishes it were dead. It wants forgiveness, yet it sees no hope. It wants escape, yet can conceive of none because it sees the sinful everywhere. The unforgiving mind is in despair, without the prospect of a future which can offer anything but more despair. Yet it regards its judgment of the world as irreversible and does not see that it has condemned itself to this despair. It thinks it cannot change, for what it sees bears witness that its judgment is correct. It does not ask because it thinks it knows. It does not question. Certain it is right. Forgiveness is acquired. It is not inherent in the mind which cannot sin. As sin is an idea you taught yourself, forgiveness must be learned by you as well, but from a teacher other than yourself, who represents the other self in you. Through him or her, you learn how to forgive the self you think you made and let it disappear. Thus, you return your mind as one to him who is yourself, and who can never sin. The unforgiving mind, for present you with an opportunity to teach your own how to forgive itself. Each one awaits release from hell through you and turns to you imploringly for heaven here and now. It has no hope, but you become its hope. And as its hope, you become your own. The unforgiving mind must learn through your forgiveness that it has been saved from hell. And as you teach this process of healing, you will learn. Yet all your teaching and your learning will not be of you, but of a teacher who has given you to show you the way. What is your brother for? You do not know, because your own function is obscure to you. Do not ascribe a role to him that you imagine would bring happiness to you. And do not try to hurt him or yourself when he fails to take the part that you've assigned him. Take a breath with that one. Powerful stuff, that Course in Miracles. The memory of love comes to the quiet mind. It cannot come where there is conflict. For a mind at war within itself remembers not eternal gentleness. Remember the key with the first century Aramaic forgiveness process is that you collapse the output of this mind until it gets quiet, until it is still. And then you invite Rukka. For those who are new to the show, Rukka is the ancient name of an elemental force that resided within the human being that was given to us to undo the effects of our error and teach us the truth. So the Course goes on to say, in gentle laughter does Rukka perceive the cause and looks not to effects. How else could she correct your error, you who have overlooked the cause entirely? She bids you bring each terrible effect to her, that you may look together on its foolish cause and laugh with her a while. You judge effects, but she has judged their cause. And by her judgment are effects removed. Perhaps you come in tears, but hear her say, my brother, holy son or daughter of love, behold your idle dream in which this could occur, and you will leave the holy instant with your laughter and your brothers and sisters joined with his. Perception. An active process, something that impacts all the world around us. And what we're here to do is to share with you the tools for undoing that unforgiving mind. Remembering that forgiveness does not mean I'm going to let you off the hook for the pain, the turmoil, the trauma my mind is producing. The mind that lives in denial will always hallucinate that the cause of its turmoil and its pain is outside of it. But it can't deny that it's in turmoil and pain again and again and again. And every time it's been in that turmoil or pain, though the object of attention is different each time, it's the mind that was there in its own denied, dissociated turmoil and pain. We have a very concrete definition, experiential definition of denial. That is, when I have a state of mind and I try to convince somebody else that they're responsible for it, I have a state of mind and I think and speak as though somebody or something else outside of me is cause. Now I'm in denial, and the effect or the impact of that denial is that I dissociate from the part of me that creates that turmoil. And it's not until I forgive that I can access once again, in clarity, bring healing to it. Bring the active presence of love, the truth about you. And another experiential definition we have is the definition of a human life. hold the newborn child, you know exactly what a human being is. That's what we're here to support you being restored to, that awesome presence of love. And if you're experiencing anything less, it's because your perceptual system holds something that never belonged in you. Stop trying to convince the world that it is the cause of what goes on inside. Go inside and be freed. Virtually everyone in the world, the whole world has taught us, it's my spouse's fault, it's my child's fault. It's the person's fault that I see when I look in the mirror. Interesting, in the Aramaic language, we are our own neighbor. Neighbor simply means anybody that you think about. As you allow that gentle presence of love to shift the generational layers of perception of enemy, to shift you out of the dynamics of your power person. And one of the things we've come across in the years of doing this work is the recognition that for someone who's living in that dissociated state, there are only three possible behaviors. And they all relate to levels of stress, and they all relate to a power person dynamic. Someone who's living out of that carbon-based memory, when there's no stress, they'll do whatever they did to get along with the power person. When stress starts to build, they'll shift out of that and they'll move into doing whatever they did to resist and survive with the power person. And then when they become ultra-stressed, they'll do whatever their power person did that they hated the most. Think about that last situation. How did it feel when your power person did that to you? Enter into forgiveness and you collapse that whole dynamic. No need to convince anyone else that they're the fault for what's happening inside of you. You are freed from those energies of turmoil. It is not your spouse. Though your mind may show you 1,000 times that your spouse is the problem in your life. It is not your child. It is not your parent. It is not your employee. It is not your neighbor. It is always the content of your own mind that is the cause of your pain. If that makes any sense to you, we invite you to engage in using the reality management tool that we've developed. It's an expression of the ancient Aramaic first century process of forgiveness, a step-by-step worksheet. Here's how you crack and break down the perceptual mind and its projection so that you can come back to the truth of who you are. The last thing that the non-being mind, that the hostility and fear-based mind wants to do is have anything to do with that process. So notice its resistance and then choose to forgive. If you haven't engaged in that process yet, if this is new to you, then we invite you to go to our website, www.whyagain.org. In the upper left-hand corner, you'll see a link that says Start Here. There's also a big red and white bullseye in the middle of the page. Click that bullseye, click that link in the upper left-hand corner, and you'll see a link, a series of links, and an explanation of where to get started with the forgiveness process. So that's what we're here to support you with. We're delighted that you're here to share with us. Jeannie, is Dr. Tim with us today?
I'm here.
Well, good. How do you be, sir?
I'm doing beautifully, thank you. I don't know if Jeannie has her mute button on or if she's away from the phone, but thank you for turning me on, Jeannie. And that was a wonderful intro. I love the various parts of Course in Miracles that you pull out and clarify so beautifully. We listened to the first half of A New Beginning on Tuesday, and it was another... We had somebody else there who's there for the first time, and he was very familiar with A Course in Miracles, and his comment was very similar to what I just made, that you have a way of selecting key portions and clarifying the meaning that I don't get when I read the text myself. So thank you for that. That was delightful.
Glad to be on the team. It's my honor and my privilege.
Yeah, I am.
And of course, as Richard Bach says, we teach best that which we also need to learn, right? So here we go.
Here we go. And what's been happening so far today in sessions is kind of boils down to people who've been raised by power people who were so severely in pain and distorted in their perception of the world that their conditioning is very similar to what the rest of us have been conditioned to in this culture, which is looking to the outside for a cause about the inside, everything you just spoke about. But there are some of us have had a much more intense conditioning or negative training in that regard. And it's mind-boggling for me and often for the people I work with to realize how simple the solution is. And that the same solutions that I need to use coming from an environment that was very loving and nurturing in my family life is the same process that someone needs to use if they came from a severely abusive process or environment in their family life. It's all an inside job. And the simple but powerful techniques that you have made available through the Reality Management Worksheet and the breath work are as useful for me as they are for people who were raised in a very traumatic environment. And then the other thing that came up again today was the whole idea of the breath work. And I've been doing some reading lately that talks about all of the scientific or repeated validation of how the breath work facilitates the movement of energy, facilitates awareness of the body, facilitates awareness of higher levels of consciousness, and it cuts across all different spiritual traditions and cultures. And so that's what's been on the topic for session so far this morning.
Cool. One of the things that you trigger as you're saying that is the memory of the young man who came to Heartland. Oh, this goes back probably close to 20 years ago. And this young man was, if I remember correctly, I believe he was 38 years of age. And from the time he was 14, he did not have a day in his life where he drew a sober breath. And his story was his hatred of his father and how his father did this to him and how his father did that and how his father rejected him and how his father and his father and his father and, I mean, he just went on and on and on about his father, and he was totally, completely estranged from his father, no contact whatsoever. And after about a, he came and he was on the support team at Heartland. After about a year of some pretty deep work, his second summer, we did a breath session, and in that breath session, he shared with the group when he came out of it that he experienced himself as though he were a tree, and his roots went deep into the earth, and he could feel energy deep in the earth. And as he had that experience, all of a sudden, he could remember the first time. I mean, I knew him by this point for over a year, had done a lot of work with him, a lot of processing, had not heard a kind or decent word toward his father. And all of a sudden, out of this experience of being rooted in the earth energetically, he has this memory of his father bouncing him on his knee. And it's like the floodgates open and all these awesome times and the presence of love that his father was for him, not that there wasn't the other side, but he didn't have access to any of those memories in that state of hostility that he had. And as he was able to process it out, I don't know whether it was that connection to the earth that drained the hostility off sufficiently, but all of a sudden there was this flood of new memories and wonderful memories with his father and the things his father did for him and how much he cared for him and loved him. And he actually, in a very short time, he got in the car and he drove. His father lived in Ohio. He drove to Ohio to just hug his father and thank him. His father, by this stage, was very ill. Actually had lung cancer. And about a month later, his father got in the car in Ohio and drove back to Heartland to thank me for the shift that happened for his son. And that he was able to reclaim his relationship with his son after so many years of watching him with drugs and alcohol, the pain and the trauma. And when he died in that connected space with his son instead of that those decades of estrangement. And it's just so monumental to watch what's possible, to watch what can happen when somebody lets go long enough to let go. It's just, and I know you have that experience with people, and it's just makes it all triple worthwhile when somebody makes that breakthrough.
Yeah, and as I've said for years, it is just it's truly a blessing to be around when people choose to get healthy. And
yes.
And that's what's happening. It's people often want to give me credit for their healing, and I tell them, listen, if you had an inkling of how many times I've said the same things to thousands of other people who never came back for a second session, then you'd begin to realize how you are responsible for the improvements in your life.
For sure.
And when they get it,
for sure,
it's empowering at different levels. And yeah, it's a blessing to be around when people get it, but it's people doing their own work. And it's my last several different blog entries for the past 4 or 5 weeks have just been about gratitude for the group of people who've chosen to dedicate their time and come and do their own work, integrate disruptive energies at different levels, and support others for doing that. It's a joy to be around that kind of commitment to making their own lives and therefore the world a better place.
Yeah, I always choose to see it and say it as, and it's an observation that I've made that just really works for me, and that is, it's always awesome when human life enters the room. When human life enters a body that's been racked with pain and turmoil and blaming everything and everybody else, trying to convince everybody else that it's the problem in the lives. When human life enters there, when that gateway is open, when Rothma is opened, and that gateway allows the space for human life to enter, and the shift in energy, the healing that happens, and it's not something that can be done by figuring it out. It's not something that can be done by anything except doing your work and opening the space to be taught how to do it. And it's just, it's monumental. And I certainly appreciate the people, as you're speaking of, I certainly appreciate the people who choose to go on the journey with us. It's just amazing. And the preparations that are happening here in Pompano for the Women Healing Women Retreat next week. Looks like it's going to be a very full house. It's going to be a pretty awesome happening. And Jeannie, I certainly applaud you and what you've created in doing this. It's amazing. So.
Thank you. It's going to be exciting.
Oh, is Michelle with us today?
Don't have her on.
Okay. Well, do we have anything happening in the chat room in the way of questions or conversations that we need to be aware of, and or is anybody who is in the phone queue, do they have their hand up? And by the way, anybody who is on one of those stations we can't see in our control panel, if you want to talk to us, you can call in to 646 800-400-4169, or if you're outside of the country, you can Skype in, or actually inside the country, you can Skype in as well and listen to the show and give us your questions and your comments. So we've got anybody there with a hand up in the phone queue, sweetie?
Nobody has their hand up. We have a whole lot of people on the switchboard. Chat rooms are quiet. So if someone presses one, they're first in line.
Now's the opportunity. You've got a question for us. We would love to hear your questions. Is there something that I've said, that Dr. Tim and I have said, that you say, wow, wait a minute, that doesn't make sense. How is that possible? Come on. Ask the question. We'd love to support you. And, you know, it's really the questions that are important. They're much more important than the answers. When we can still our minds, when we can get, you know, I think it was Emerson that said, get your bloated nothingness out of the way. When we can get our stories quiet, when we get the bloated nothingness out of the way, which is what forgiveness does, then the space is there for us to be taught. And so when someone brings forward a lifetime of search and brings forward the question that's so important, when we're still, the answer shows up. And so we'd love to hear your question.
We have a hand up.
Let's say hello.
I think it's Julie Matthews, 541. You're on the air.
Hi, yes, it is. Thank you. I'm so excited.
You need to hold your microphone still for us to hear you. There's too much action there, and we can't hear a word you're saying.
Oh, yes. Excuse me. That's better. Is this better?
Yeah, I can hear you now.
Had my phone in my pocket when I was walking, so that's what that's all about. I just appreciate both of you so much, and this work is so expanding. And evidence of that, just one piece, is that Jeannie's doing this workshop. She's come such a long way since I first met you all. And congratulations and thank you, because I'm tuning into your work, Jeannie, and I feel its power already. I truly wish I could be there. So I will participate in the way I can be supportive from where I am, and I will just be focusing my worksheets and my entire 4 days. You know, I will keep an awareness and a space of love for the work that I know the others who are attending are doing for all of us. And we have to kind of like be ready to receive the work and the lifting that takes place, because it prods us on, and it helps things come to the surface for us too. And so it's just so far-reaching, and I'm so grateful to be a part of it, even though I can't be there physically.
Cool. So, well, we're glad you can be here in that energetic mm-hmm. dynamic where if we choose to listen in, it's all available. So delighted to have you on the team, and delighted that you're out there holding the space. That's fabulous.
Yeah, a lot of good things are happening here. You may have noticed. I'm not sure if you've noticed, but I was talking to Ed the other day, and I showed him the book that you carry with you when you do your workshops by Terry Livingood, called The Bible of Translation.
Bible for Translation. Yeah, he ordered it.
He ordered one. Huh?
Yes. We just shipped it the other day. So.
Oh, awesome. Okay, well, I could talk more, and I'm just very grateful, and I would like to say I hear the change in everybody. I mean, Sunny has come a long way, too. She's the one that reminded me to read the Bible again, the Bible of Translation, because she said she'd read the whole thing through, and I just feel like the more we feed ourselves and nourish ourselves, it happens. It's a promise. It's a law, you know, this word.
Yes. Yeah, for sure. Very
and,
cool. All right, well, thank you.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening. Bye-bye. By the way, for those who aren't familiar with that book, the book is entitled The Bible for Translation, and interestingly enough, it has nothing to do with the Bible, and it's got nothing to do with translating languages. It's not about language as such. If you go back into the ancient scriptures, the word translate was a word that was applied to the stepping up of the so-called physical body to the non-physical. You'll go back to Elijah, They didn't find a body. He didn't leave it behind. He translated. So this book is about translation. And it is the reason we carry it. I was actually at Unity Village. This goes back, oh, probably 27, 28 years ago. I was keynoting at a healing conference at Unity Village. And I was staying there at the Village Motel, for those who are familiar with that property. And this guy comes knocking on my door and says, "Hey, I was at your presentation yesterday, and yeah, I think you might like to read this." And he hands me a manuscript that he's been working on. And so I said, "Thank you." And I spent almost the whole week with it and found it to be just extremely powerful. And for me, what it is the best collection of God thoughts on the planet. It is absolutely awesome. And when you start sowing the seed, you know, you look at the world and the world has got a seed to give you. The seed is hostility, it's fear, it's blame, it's guilt, it's war, it's vengeance, it's violence, it's a lack of integrity, it's hatred, it's all those things. And if we buy those seeds and sow them within our field, they are literal, actual energies that produce results. And this book seeds some of the most awesomely beautiful and powerful mind energy that you'll ever find on planet Earth. So if you decide you want to get a copy of that, you can go to the catalog page on our website, and it's something that that we do have with us that we can ship out to you if you want a copy. So anyway, that's what that book is about, and we thank and acknowledge Terry Living Good for being the gentleman who brought that through into the world. So Judy, back to you, sweetheart. What have you got to say?
Well, I'm actually a little bit sidetracked. I'm trying to chat with Blog Talk here to figure out. Tim had sent a message yesterday that our October-November archives weren't working, so for anybody who's trying to click on those, Susan Giles and I have been working on that this morning, trying to figure out what's going on, and found out that Blog Talk just keeps changing the title of the shows. And so we titled them different from what they title them, and it's a dead link. So I'm chatting with them now, trying to get them to be consistent and quit making changes. So I'm a little bit sidetracked. I'm about half listening to you. I apologize.
Okay.
All right. I have something for you, Michael.
Yes, sir.
I just got a text from Michelle, and she sent it to several of us. But I'll read it to you. She's missing the show today because she's in training for substance abuse disorder. And she says it's very eye-opening, and her beliefs have been questioned. And she spoke up passionately but respectfully about what she's learned from you and how it conflicts with what they're teaching in the class. And she said, "Let's just say I created quite a stir in the training class of 25 social workers and licensed clinical professional counselors. The instructor, who agreed and remarked that Michelle was well-spoken and stated it well, the instructor had to intervene because it really raised the dander of some folks. One guy actually called her beliefs dangerous. He said that's what's referred to as a ducking situation. So she would call for our support today just to help her get through the trials of getting this work done and sharing her truth. She said she connected with someone at lunch who agreed with what she shared, and she's given them the resources to your website, et cetera. But Michelle is out there and could use the emotional and mental energy of love."
Got it. Well, we'll make sure we hold that space for her, and that's pretty awesome. And, you know, one of the things we know is that when one has what I like to call a weak truth to protect, in other words, they've got a piece of the puzzle and they believe it's the whole puzzle, when that is questioned, then stress goes up. And those in stress are willing to attack in any way, shape, or form that they can in order to try to keep from having to look at the deeper levels of their own minds and the deeper stresses that are there. And so, she's chosen to travel the path of mastery, and this is another step in her process in doing that. So that's pretty cool that she's confronting that, especially with other professionals, and that will just hold the space that she's in strength and clarity and holds her ground. And if anything less than love comes up in her, that she's able to quickly process through that and just be that space, so that everybody else in the class is able to hear and see and gather benefit from what she's saying. That's cool.
You're here.
Thank you for sharing that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
Well, and if there's nobody else with their hand up, the other thing that came up so far today was this very mystifying thing we talk about, where at one level or another, once you've mastered doing the worksheet process, about anybody that you think triggered anger or fear or sadness in you, eventually you'll get to the point where you'll start doing some worksheets on good things that happen and your belief that someone outside you made you feel happy. And this related
right.
to what Reverend Jane was talking about yesterday. And I'm not sure if it came through on the air, but Michelle and I had a discussion about this while you were gone, because she was just thrilled by some compliment she'd gotten from some clients. And you might want to address that. What's this very bizarre twist that we add when we say, yeah, and one of these days you'll do worksheets about the good things that happen in your life?
Well, of course, that all stems from the whole codependence game, and in this work, we define codependence as the belief that someone else could possibly cause anything to happen in your mind. And, of course, the first order of business is usually to work through all the negative things that we blame others for. We do to ourselves the negative states of mind, but when we enter into denial and dissociation, our mind hallucinates blame that it's somebody else's fault. And the principle is exactly the same. When I say, you made me mad, I'm in denial and dissociation, and I don't have access to that part of my mind that holds mad, and therefore I'm condemned to repeat it. And in exactly the same way, when I am in denial, that is, I speak about you as the cause of my happiness, my joy, or my delight, you know, I think it's appropriate to perhaps acknowledge someone who does something that's cooperative and caring and, you know, and just right on track and say, gee, you know, thanks for supporting me and being able to choose happiness today, but you didn't cause my happiness. Because if I believe you caused my happiness, then the next time my sadness is below the surface, I'm going to be in codependence and want to blame you for that when it comes up. And so I step out of codependence when I let go of the belief that anything outside of me causes anything inside of me. That which is outside of me can show me what's inside of me, but it can't cause it. And once I realize that, then I take charge of and am empowered to access that happiness in situations that everybody would say is impossible. If I think it's something out there that has to happen, a condition in the external world has to be met for me to choose happiness, then when that condition isn't met, I won't be choosing it. It will seem like I don't have access to happiness because that isn't doing what it's supposed to do. You know, I love that that passage in the course that I read that says, you know, don't assign the task of making your brother responsible for your joy. You're the one who's cut it off. It's got nothing to do with your brother. And don't try to make your brother responsible for the fact that you are in joy when you are. Can your brother, your sister, support you in moving there? Yes, but it will always be your choice to do so. The good, the bad, and the ugly, it's all the same. And if we're in codependence in the arena of all the good stuff, it won't be long before we fall into the game of making all the bad stuff somebody else's fault, or so-called bad stuff. And
well,
so,
and the thing that I said to Michelle that seemed to strike a chord for her was when I asked her, you know, you're talking about how after you read these texts, you focused your thoughts and you were feeling so wonderful and loving. And the question would be, why aren't you feeling that all the time? if you're focused on your true nature as the creative energy of love, then that's what you're going to be experiencing. So that seems
unless you're codependent and you think somebody else, unless you're codependent, you think somebody else has to create a condition where you can select it or choose it.
Exactly.
Yeah, so that's why you do worksheets around the good stuff too.
To get more and more clear about what's actually the truth of life and my role in it.
Yes. Very cool. Thank you for bringing that forward, and accolades to Michelle. And we just invite the whole community to hold the space for her, that she is empowered to hold such a space that it opens for each mind to be able to hear whatever it is they're ready to hear of the truth about how the game works, and especially the truth of how the forgiveness process works. It's such a an awesome, awesome device to have in your hands and to actually use. Of course, many people, we put it into their hands, but they don't use it, and it's not long before they slip back into the darkness of blaming everybody else and trying to convince everybody else that it's their fault that they're not happy, that they've hidden the joy from themselves. So, Jeannie, do we have anybody with a hand up?
Yes, we do. We have,
well, let's say hello.
All right. The first one is area code 417.
417, you're on the air. Welcome.
Good morning, Michael and Jeannie. This is
Judy, young lady. This is Judy, for everybody who doesn't know Judy. She's at Heartland right now.
I'm holding the fort down here, me and Julie are, and on this beautiful autumn
weather.
Thank
you both.
Have been enjoying the radio show while you all were out at sea and overseas, and just amazed at the amount of information that Dr. Kim and Michelle put out there for us and those who participated. I'm really humbly proud of Michelle. She is amazing, the amount of work that she is doing, and she is a go-getter. I'm just so proud of her.
It's cool to watch it happen, isn't it?
Well, I was her mama trigger when she was here for the summer, so.
Right.
And anyway, as her mama trigger, I'm totally approving. So,
cool.
Anyway, I also wanted to thank Julie for her support here at Heartland. She is an amazing, awesome facilitator, and you can't get by with anything with her. She nails you and nails the issues. So we were.
She supports you.
She does. A wonderful support. Amazing. Absolutely amazing at how intuitive and on target she is. When we can get through things a lot faster when she's in the room. We were doing a worksheet the other day. And she had come up here, and I'm sitting at the table, and I'm saying, I'm so tired. Start in talking and going into the worksheet, and I'm passing out in front of her, literally going unconscious, and it's just a wonder that my head just didn't drop to the table. and she says, well, we'll just have to do this another time, and you're really tired. And she got up and left. And then so a couple of days pass, and so we go back and we try again. And I told her, I said, I don't know what it is. I'm having this issue that every time I even think about doing worksheets, I start feeling dizzy, and I start having these manifestations of exhaustion and tired. And I'll go, even when I go to sit to do a worksheet, I have to go to sleep. Like I get down to the second or third question and answer it, and I have to go to sleep for a while before I can go through the rest of it. And she's listening to me explain this, and she's sitting over there musing over this. I can see this little smile coming across her face, and she says, Judy, you're in resistance. Well,
no.
Yeah. Big time. And I was thinking, well, I thought that was normal for everybody because during the summer, I cannot tell you how many times I get in that room to do a worksheet and I would just pass out. And I thought everybody was going through this. And so we talked a little bit more about it, and she's kind of laughing when she's telling me this, that this is not wanting to face whatever it is I've got to face here. And we nailed it down to change, that change is very unsettling for me. And also responsibility. I feel like I have to be responsible for everything and everyone around me because as an oldest child, being raised to help mom when dad wasn't around, take care of things, it was my responsibility. And if anything went wrong, especially with when I was in my dad's home, it was my responsibility to take whatever it was that he dished out. So the issues were so intense around this that, and I, the worksheets caused change, and I just refused. Evidently, my whole being has been backing out of it out of fear for change. So we got it down to that, and she showed me an umbrella over my head. She gave me a visual, and each one of the points on the umbrella represented someone or something in my life that I have a relationship with and how it has failed me, or not it has failed me, but I have failed to stay connected with it. And after she showed that to me, and she asked me a question about each one of them, she says, how is your relationship with this particular thing? It's not. Every one of them, it's not. Down the line, all the way around the umbrella. And she said, because your mantra is, and she caught me in my language, she says, your mantra is that you can't win for losing. Uh-huh. And it all has to go
nice
back
catch.
With, oh, man, was it. You know, it'll change my whole life. It is
yes,
changing my
it
whole
already
life.
Has.
And I'm going into it with enthusiasm and gratitude.
Good for
really.
You.
Yes. And so that, oh, but there was one other thing, too. This is, I was doing a worksheet on change last night, and my breath got ice cold. First, I felt an ice coldness all around me. And then my breath, my very breath, went from warm to ice.
Mm-hmm.
So what energies that I have been holding in, and that space is kind of cold now and empty, and I fill it with love? How does that go?
Well, a couple of things. We're down to just a few seconds, but one of the questions I'd ask is, were there ever drugs and alcohol in your life or in your genetic history?
Yes, there was in my grandmother's, yes.
So then that's something you're going to process out. And as you do process that energy out, it's going to look like, you know, needing to go to sleep, just blank, going unconscious. Remember that one of the symptoms of healing is you're reorganizing your energy systems is low energy. And that's what happens. It just drops out as the energy is used to restructure things. So that's just part of the healing process. And I've observed over the years what I've come to call an endothermic and an exothermic reaction. In the exothermic reaction, heat leaves the structure on an atomic level. We could put 20 blankets on somebody and they still won't be warm. And I suspect that's what's happening. You're reaching that level of atomic process and letting things go on that deeper level. So you're right on track. That's awesome. And we are down to just the last few seconds. So we're going to have to close the show out, and we'll just offer that the best gift you can give to the world is create the best year yet of your eternal life, and we join and support you in doing that. Blessings. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie, who present the internal Aramaic process of forgiveness. Michael and Jeannie are here every Monday through Friday on Earth Angels Radio. For more on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. That's www.whyagain.com.